Two readings for you to begin this morning off. The first one comes from Exodus chapter 3. That's a story you're all going to be very familiar with. It's verses 2 through 15, but I'm sort of just reading selected verses since you're all so familiar with the story, and I'm reading it from the Inclusive Bible. The messenger of Yahweh appeared to Moses in a blazing fire from the midst of a thorn bush. Moses saw, quote, "the bush is blazing with fire, and yet it isn't consumed." And Moses said, "Let me go over and look at this remarkable sight and see why the bush doesn't burn up." When Yahweh saw Moses coming to look more closely, God called out to him from the midst of the bush, "Moses, Moses." And Moses answered, "I am here." And God said to him, "Come no closer, remove those sandals from your feet, for the place where you stand is holy ground." Then Yahweh said, "I have seen the affliction of my people in Egypt. I have heard their cries under their oppressor who oppresses them. I have felt their sufferings. Now go. I will send you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." But Moses said, "When I go to the children of Israel and say to them, 'The God of your ancestors has sent me to you,' if they ask me, 'What is this God's name?' what am I to tell them?" And God replied, "I am as I am. This is what you will tell the Israelites. I am sent me to you. Tell the children of Israel, Yahweh, the I am, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham and Sarah, of Rebekah and Isaac, of Leah and Rachel and Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever. This is the name you are to remember for all generations." May we add blessing and understanding to the reading of these words. I'd also like to read a very brief excerpt from an essay from Albert Einstein entitled Science and Religion. It's from 1954. "But science can only be created by those who are thoroughly imbued with the aspiration towards truth and understanding. This source of feeling, however, springs from the sphere of religion. To this, there also belongs the faith in the possibility that the regulations valid for the world of existence are rational, that is, comprehensible to reason. I cannot conceive of a genuine scientist without that profound faith. The situation may be expressed by an image. Science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind." Dave, I wonder if we can get you to play a tune for us.
Sure.
Thank you, sir.
The title of this song is 16 Turtles. And there is no story associated with the title. Yet. It has something to do with Exodus, it turns out. Thank you.
often have musical performers here that make me wonder why I'm even coming up to talk after they finish. I think Dave is the one that most consistently makes me feel that way. It was stunning, David. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. My message this morning is entitled Spinoza's God. Religion prefers a definable God, which is somewhat understandable. I mean, by definition, one of the purposes of religion is to draw us closer to this thing that we call God. And the way that religion has typically been practiced, this implies some degree of knowing God. To know God, we must be able to at least somewhat define God. The problem is, in the act of defining God, we are limiting God. And I ask you, what kind of God is a limited God? Is that even a God at all? For me, that is one of the downfalls of most religions. They tend to be rooted in our personal need for a personal God. One that is actually knowable. And one of the problems with that is ultimately, a knowable God is a slippery slope. If we know God, we can begin to define God. And those who are tasked with defining God can then begin to shape God. And in shaping God, we control certain things about God. And I ask you, what kind of God is a controllable God? Is that even a God at all? It seems to me that religion, by its very nature, is predestined to feed us a less than nuanced, less than thorough, less than authentic understanding of God. In short, a God that is less than God-like. Our need to personalize and understand and ultimately control God removes much of the divine from God. I'm left to wonder if Jesus told parables to teach us about God because they're more open-ended than just stating facts about God and defining God. Could it be that that is the reality that Jesus' Jewish ancestors were trying to teach us with the story they told about finding God in a burning bush? A story in which God itself proclaims the divine name to be Yahweh, I am as I am, or I will be what I will be. And that seems rooted in nature and the name of God, and we learn that the name is open-ended, practically undefinable. I am as I am. I am. Perhaps that is the God Albert Einstein said he believed in. He called it Spinoza's God. Brooke Spinoza, one of the most important philosophers of the early modern period of philosophy. And at the age of 24, I mentioned he was 24, when his religious leaders excommunicated him at the age of 24 for monstrous deeds and abominable heresies. He kind of sounds like he'd be a fun guy to hang out with. Now, no one is quite certain what these monstrous deeds and abominable heresies are. But based on his later writings, it doesn't take much imagination to summarize or surmise that they had to do with his early philosophical and theological ponderings, which ran heavily against the teachings of the religion and the leaders that gave him the boot, ultimately. Spinoza's God stood over and against much of what traditional Judeo-Christian theology taught. Creation, in his mind, creation was not something separate from God, which God caused to happen out of free will, but rather, creation was God, in that it was of God and from God and of the substance of God. It formed because it could do no other. Creation flowed out of the nature of God, out of the allness of God, out of the everythingness of God. The philosophical, theological impact of that understanding is massive. Creation just is. It wasn't created with a specific purpose, as traditional Judeo-Christian Christianity taught. Rather, its full purpose, was being. Now, extending that a bit further, it would no longer follow that an anthropomorphized understanding of God who stands in judgment over us is necessary, more or less a rational presumption. Would God need to stand in judgment of God's self? Of course not. Now, in terms of modern religion, much of our teachings and time are spent in the space between hope and fear. It is in those very spaces that much of our beliefs and our superstitions are born. The tension between hope and fear gives rise to some extremely problematic and hurtful emotions. Those very emotions can become prohibitive to fully experiencing joy and peace and love in this life. Yeah, I have to say, Spinoza's God seems much more rational and life-giving than the version of God that has been grown out of some reorganized religion in that space between hope and fear. Unlike the God of many religions, Spinoza's God is not a God of judgment, in need of adoration and obedience. Instead, Spinoza's God is the substance from which all is formed, from which all flows. It is to be experienced, not feared. It calls for our curiosity and our fascination, not our adoration. And in that, Spinoza's God is understood through philosophy and science rather than through religious institutions and personal relationships. And for some, that God flies in the face of some of the attributes they associate with God. As an example, that understanding of God has no room for specific miracles. All that is, and this what way of seeing the world, flows from God. The laws of reality or of physics stem from and are of the substance of God. How could we expect that that God would bend the laws of reality just for us when they already flow from that God? Or yet, worse yet, bend the laws of reality for us and not for others. That also implies that the way many modern prayers approach God are somewhat useless. Flinging out wishes to the source from which reality already extends, that asks then for that reality to be altered, it seems futile at best. For Spinoza, rather than asking God for favors, our focus should be on understanding what God wants. And we do this through science and philosophy and psychology. A rather beautiful and creative meme written a few years ago by a person of the name Michelle Fortes provides what I believe to be an imagined sort of contemporary quote from Spinoza on what that looks like in God's words. For me, it leans a bit heavily towards the writings, if you've ever read Neil Donald Walsh. And ironically, it is a bit anthropomorphized of God, but I appreciate the extrapolation of what the understanding of Spinoza's God could look like and what God might tell us. In it, it says, "Stop being praying and giving you blows in the chest. What I want you to do is to go out into the world and enjoy your life. I want you to enjoy. You sing. Have fun. and enjoy everything that I've done for you. Stop going through those gloomy, dark, and cold temples that you built yourself and that you say to be my home. Stop blaming me for your sad life. I never told you that you were a sinner. Stop having me so scarred. I do not judge you, nor do I criticize you, nor anger me, nor bother me, nor punish me. I am pure love. I have made you absolutely free. There are no prizes or punishments. There are no sins or virtues. No one carries a marker. No one carries a record. You are absolutely free to create in your life heaven or hell. Respect your peers. And don't do what you don't want to do. The only thing I ask you is to pay attention in your life that your alert status is your guide. This life is the only thing there is, here and now, and the only thing you need. Express your joy. That's how you praise me. It's a beautiful expression of what life can be, or even what life should be. The difficulty comes in our humanity. We have two approaches to life that pulls us in very different directions. Spinoza defines them as, quote, the aspect of time and, quote, the aspect of eternity. Our immediate life, our experiential life, encourages towards a sort of time-bound, more personally centered view of life. And a great deal of religious teachings about God are based on this sort of here and now perspective. And on the other hand, our intellect and our ability to reason draws us towards a fuller understanding of existence and our place in it. Or as Spinoza, I think, poetically puts it, they invite us to take part in eternal totality. As it turns out, approaching life through an aspect of eternity rather than an aspect of limited time, it will actually guide us in a way that makes it easier to follow the lessons of many great spiritual teachers like Jesus. When we focus our attention too finitely on the here and now, the things that bring us the most joy, happiness, and satisfaction tend to be the things that end a bit, that impact us the most positively individually. They tend to be made based more on reason than on emotion than on reason. And conversely, when we focus on the eternal nature of creation and the divine, the things that bring us most joy and happiness and satisfaction tend to be the things that impact universal good the most positively. And almost counterintuitively, they tend to be based more in reason than in emotion, but never lacking in either. Now, I am not arguing for a purely logical, theological outlook, but I am suggesting that a more rational, theological outlook is much more likely to enable us to follow the lessons of Jesus and other great spiritual teachers. As Spinoza put it in his theologico-political treatise, I have often wondered that persons who make a boast of professing the Christian religion, namely love, joy, peace, temperance, and charity of all men, should quarrel with such rancorous animosity and display daily towards one another such bitter hatred. That is, rather than the virtues they claim, is the readiest criterion of their faith. Spinoza's and Einstein's more rational, eternal understanding of theology should not only lead us to more readily put into practice things like equality, love, peace, and joy, but should challenge us to dig deeper in our understanding of God. For me, Spinoza's God is a God that is much more likely to be the God that Jesus was trying to point us to than the God that is professed and praised in far too many religions. And if we are truly interested in following the teachings of Jesus and other great spiritual teachings, I would humbly submit that Spinoza's God, which leads to more readily putting equality, love, peace, and joy into practice, is a far better place to begin than the God that far too many of us learned about growing up. As a matter of fact, when it comes to the God of many that many of us were taught about, I stand by a statement that I made many years ago that happened to pop up for some reason this morning on social media. I said, I have found that the God many atheists don't believe in is very similar to the God that I don't believe in. That is to say, the God that we have been taught about is not the God that I now believe in. So for now, as for me, I will stick with Spinoza's God. Dave, can I ask you to share your gifts and talents with us once again, sir? Sharing your gifts and talents, and with folks online, you know, Dave writes all of this on his own, and he is an endless stream of just amazing music. So thank you again for sharing with us. Also online, in case you're just joining us, we do ask that you leave where you're watching from, as well if you have thoughts or questions about today's service. We also invite you right now to join us here as we turn to a more inward-looking moment. Moment of prayer or meditation, or just a moment to listen to these words and hold on to the ones that you need today. So let's bow our heads. There are so many understandings of God, and yet there is only one God. So many faiths, so many denominations, so many differences, even in the Gospels where we read about God. Even between theological experts, even between well-read followers, even between me and the others who hear this prayer, our understandings of God are so ineffably difficult to pin down, to understand, to describe, to know fully. Yet we sometimes become full of ourselves, acting as if we know, hold, have, the truth about God, believing that we have done what thousands of years of history have not been able to do. We sometimes think we have the final truth and understanding about God. Let us humble our hearts, silence our sometimes haughty souls, and gain perspective. In doing so, may we grow closer to God. May we see more clearly how limited our knowledge is. May we nurture spirits which seek more of the universal reality. May we embrace a willingness to admit what we don't know. May we be inspired to not only share what we have learned with others, to open ourselves to what we can learn from them. May we celebrate spirits which revel in the reality that there is more to learn about God. Spirits which celebrate what we don't know because it means we can still grow closer to God. Spirits which are willing to toss away what we once knew for new understandings which grow us closer to God and all creation. We joyfully give thanks for all the possibilities which lie in front of us to know God more fully, and in doing so, to share love more abundantly. I leave you with this blessing. May you recognize that you and I are all part of a creation which flows abundantly from God, and that we, through it, are connected endlessly. And may your life be full of love, joy, and peace. And may you always share that love, joy, and peace with each person you meet. Go now in love, and go in peace.